thank you for having me. And really, I need to apologise to you all. You may not realise this, but I was booked to do two Sundays, one after the other. But because I'm meant to be at Hinckley Sunday mornings, I cancelled one of them. So apologies particularly to Tom, who's had to go skating around finding a substitute. But I couldn't bear not coming to see you, you see, because I've cut out nearly all my other engagements, but it so happens that this Sunday is a parade service there, so I don't actually need to be there. Hence, I'm here, and you've got to put up with me. We're thinking... Oh, we have got that up there.
It's on the screen.
It's, yes. So we're thinking today about this business of being open-handed as those called by Jesus to serve. And I was thinking about... Who are the people that not just Christians, but people in general really admire? And of course, the kind of people that come to mind are people like Mandela, obviously just died, and his death and life has been celebrated around the world by global leaders, but by ordinary people as well. And people like Mother Teresa, who wasn't a great speaker, but she was a great servant. And the thing about people like Mandela and Mother Teresa and many others that we can admire are that they are people who serve others. Some, like Mother Teresa, served with her hands, washing those who were very sick, caring for the dying. Mandela, of course, had to work very hard when he was breaking up stones, but he served his community by his life of sacrifice, didn't he? By being in prison and not being bitter and coming out and then serving the community as a politician, because politics is hard work as well. And many people in our society respect and admire the Queen because she, for many, many decades, has sought to serve the nation. We are a community, not just Christians, but in our nation, who value service. And the real reason we value service is because of Jesus. In the world in which Jesus grew up, service was not something people admired. If you could afford it, you had servants to do all the tasks. If you were a Greek-thinking person, the worst thing you could imagine was having to do things like cooking, and cleaning, and serving. Because they were bodily things, and what really mattered was ideas and the mind. So when Jesus came along and showed his disciples how to serve, it was truly earth-shattering. Heaven came to earth and showed us what true greatness really is. But I want you to listen really carefully for a moment to some of those opening verses from John chapter 13, where it says, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Now he showed them the full extent of his love. Here is Jesus, the very heart of God, who so loved the world that he sent his Son so that whoever believes in him shouldn't perish but have everlasting life. And we might have thought that John would have said, having loved his own who were in the world, he showed them the full extent of his love by dying on the cross. That's what we should have expected, isn't it? Isn't that really what John should have written? But he doesn't. He said, having loved his own who were in the world, that's the disciples and the people who followed him, he now showed his love. And what he goes on to do before he dies on the cross is to take off his jacket, pick up a towel, get a bowl, And if he'd had it, he'd have put in some fairy liquid, I think. And washed dirty feet. That is how God chose to show this world the full extent of his love. By doing the work of a slave. Now, we're not all called to literally die on a cross. But we can all show God's love by doing the most basic kinds of serving. We too can be those to whom God says, show people the full extent of my love by washing up. By putting away chairs, by weeding a garden, by saying, how are you, to the lady on the till in Asda. Oh, sorry, Sainsbury's is nearer for you. That's according to the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, how we can show, like he did, the full extent of God's love. I'd never grasped that quite so clearly until I read, even this morning, that verse, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. So I hope you can see that every one of us can show God's love in all its fullness by doing the most ordinary, basic, and humble of things. Does that make sense? It shocked me. It staggered me when that really hit me as I thought again about what I was going to say to you this morning. And I think there are really four areas where we are called to serve with open hands. And I very quickly want to go through those four areas. And I thought it might help if we did it in sort of conjunction with the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know the parable of the Good Samaritan, I'm sure. It's one of the best known stories that Jesus told, how a Samaritan, a despised person, was on his way from Jerusalem to Jericho, going down towards the Dead Sea, getting hotter and hotter, down a meandering road with lots of dark places in it. And as he does so, he comes across a man who's been beaten up and left almost dead. And before he gets there, a priest comes by and sees the man wounded and probably dead and robbed down by the side of the road and passes him by. And then a Levite, another holy person, comes by, sees him and passes him by. But the Good Samaritan stops, risks his own life because the robbers might still be around, provides first aid, medical care, pours in oil and wine, puts him on his donkey, takes him to a nearby tavern, hotel, bed and breakfast place would be the equivalent in our day, and pays for him to be looked after by the person who owned it, by the innkeeper. So here are the four areas where I believe we are called to offer service to other people with open hands in the name of Jesus, and as Christians, we can have the opportunity to show the full extent of God's love by what we do. And the first one I want us to think about is the area of work. Not church, that's coming last. Work. The things we do that we may have got paid for, or that we may do as volunteers. Maybe working in a charity shop. Maybe driving people to the hospital, all kinds of things, but basically work that we do. We can be employed, we might not be employed, but work is the first area where we're called to serve for God wherever we may be. And so if we think about the story of the Good Samaritan, we're thinking about the innkeeper. He had a job to do. He was running this bed and breakfast place. Along comes the wounded man, and he's asked to take care of him, and to look after him, and to be paid for doing so. Work is an area of service. God appointed Adam and Eve to work. He said, look after the garden for me. And when he said, this is the Sabbath day, it's to be a holy day to the Lord, you're not to do any work on it, that was one out of 7 days. 6 days you shall work, he said, and do all manner of things. So work is the first area where we can serve God. And I believe we can do that by recognizing that our paid or voluntary work is actually primarily service. So whether we're the boss or a worker, we're called to serve. But who are we called to serve? Well, if we're a worker, we're called to serve the boss. If we're a boss, we're called to serve the workers. It changes our attitude once we see it's about serving, not domineering, not fiddling, but serving. But of course, we're also called to serve the customers. And some customers can be very tricky. What do you do when you get one of those phone calls? Usually about 5 o'clock, when they think, ah, they'll be back now. And they're wanting to sell us this, that, or the other. Well, you know, I know what I do. I say, no, thank you very much, as quickly as I can. But if you're the one on the other end of the phone, how do you serve awkward customers like me? Do you shout down the phone, well, that's not very nice, is it? Or do you say, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your time. How do you serve customers? Because as Christians, we're called to serve. We may never meet the customers, but we're there through our work to serve them. And if you're fortunate enough, you may be serving the shareholders as well. It's a complicated business, but serving is a very important thing. I think another mark of being a Christian in the workplace is that we're generous. If you are an employer, please be generous to your workers. I was very pleased that the first church meeting I attended at Hinckley Baptist Church, they agreed as a church to pay the living wage to those who do their cleaning. Not just the basic rate, but the living wage, the one step up, because they felt as a Christian community we need to be as generous as possible, and that's even though they're running a deficit. But that's right, because we should be generous. We should be generous with our time. We may find someone coming to learn the job, and we need to be generous with our time and with our skills in helping them feel at home and understand what they're doing, because that's what it means to show the love of Christ in those kinds of contexts. So if you're in the workplace as a paid or volunteer, please think about how you can be generous. So when you're due to finish at 5 o'clock, if there's a bit that needs doing, don't necessarily rush out. Do the extra bit. Be generous with what you do. If you're the employer, be generous in how you treat your staff, not just financially, but by praising them, by thanking them, by appreciating them, and so on. These are all little ways that we can show the full extent of God's love. And of course, we need also to be people of total integrity in the workplace. Not trying to pinch things, not trying to cover things up, but being open, not only open-handed, but open and transparent in all we do. There's a story going around, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it goes like this, that one of the presidents of the United States was visiting NASA. And he was doing so incognito. He was just wandering around. And it was early in the morning, and he saw, I think in America they call them janitors, somebody who was cleaning the floors and the toilets. And he asked this person, he said, so what do you do here? So the person said, I help to put people on the moon. That's a good company, where everyone from the janitor to the leader knows they're contributing to the big project. We need to have that big-heartedness about what we're doing, to appreciate the significance. But we're not just putting people on the moon, my Christian friends. We are showing the full extent of God's love, like Jesus, by what we do in the workplace. The second area where we need to think about serving with open hands is in the home. Now, there are some people who think that the reason I've really gone to Hinckley is to avoid having to do things at home. They may be right. I had a job thinking who in the story of the Good Samaritan was in the home. So she doesn't get a mention, but I think she should, don't you, the innkeeper's wife? Don't you think that's fair enough? She ought to get a mention. She's the forgotten person. And that's often what happens in the home. We do things in the home, but we're not really very noticed for it. We do repetitive and boring things in the home, like changing nappies, it seems, forever. Getting the Hoover out, doing the washing, tidying up, emptying the bins, making the beds, cooking, washing up, tidying up, toys, husband's clothes, wife's clothes, whatever it might be.
Don't forget to feed the cat.
Don't forget to feed the cat, or you'll have the RSVP after you, won't you? RSPCA, rather. Very good, very good. So lots of things, we do them day in, day out. The only time anybody notices is if we don't do them. Isn't that the case? Often we do them and we don't get thanked very much for doing them. That's the home. Actually, the home is often the place where our real heart for serving is most tested, because it's least appreciated. And it's often the least exciting work that we do. But it's so, so important that we learn to serve Christ and one another in our home contexts. And that's true even if we're living on our own, because keeping our home as an example for others who, when they come to see it, is part of what it means to serve. And here again, we need to keep that sense of the big picture. And Paul does that tremendously well. If you have time, read what he has to say in Ephesians 5 and 6, because there he talks about husbands loving their wives as they would love their own body and as Christ loves the church. You see, here it is again. In the home, in all the daily routine, we have the opportunity to do something incredible, to show the love of Christ to one another. And when you're changing those nappies, or when you're tidying up after the teenagers, or even when you're paying the bill for their mobile phones, don't lose sense of what you're really doing, because every time you serve someone in the home, you're actually giving them an example. You're modelling what it is to be a Christian person. You're indicating and mapping out for them the full extent of the love of God. And if we can really get hold of this big picture stuff that we're sharing with our children or with our partner, what it means for God to love them in the most basic and practical of ways, it can transform our attitude. There was a 17th century poet, but he was also a priest, called George Herbert, and sometimes we sing some of his hymns. One of them goes, "Teach me, my God and King, in all things thee to see, and what I do in anything, to do it unto thee." And there's another verse which said, "A servant with this clause makes drudgery divine." And the clause is that we're doing it for God. It's part of our Christian calling, my friends, to serve one another in the routine things of our daily lives in the home. Well, I'm sure the innkeeper's wife knew all about that. And the third area where we're called to use our service to serve God with open hands is what you might call as the good neighbour. like the Good Samaritan himself, like the prime person in this story was a good neighbour. And there are again many, many ways that we can be good neighbours. Anybody can be a good neighbour, especially if they have a bad neighbour living next door. Because our attitude to that person, especially if they do some things that are annoying, is very important. Will we just spend time chatting over the fence? I wonder if you've ever thought that that kind of caring, listening, gossipy kind of conversation is a way of showing God's love. But it can be, and it should be, because as Christians, that's what we're called to do, because we're giving time to someone who maybe needs a chat, needs a listening ear, needs a comforting word. But of course, it shouldn't stop there. We may be able to help our neighbours to cut their lawn, to make them a cup of tea, to go shopping, whatever it might be. These are ways to serve our neighbours. And the same happens at the school gate and in the shop, as I've already indicated. How do we treat the person who rams their trolley up our backside because they can't wait? Do we turn round in anger? Or do we turn round and say, sorry, I was in your way. I know which I do. I know I shouldn't do it. But how we behave at every moment of the day can be a ministry for Jesus Christ. And then, of course, there are the big occasions when somebody really needs us. We're wandering down the street with an umbrella and two bags, and somebody drives up in a car and says, please, can you tell me the way to Warwick University? And we think, well, I can, but I don't feel like doing it. Got too much clutter here, can't you see? But no, as Christians, we need to find the grace to explain as clearly and simply as possible how you get to Warwick University and not be malicious and send them into Coventry City Centre. And there may be somebody we find accidentally, so it would appear, like the Good Samaritan did, who's in real need. They may even be in the gutter. That's one of the great things that street pastors do when they find people who've been binge drinking. And we might say, well, it's your own fault. What are you doing out at night in those ridiculous clothes? Didn't your mother tell you to get dressed properly before you went out? You know, we can think all those thoughts, but street pastors are there for those who are sick, who don't know what they're doing, to help provide them with care and compassion, and so to show the love of Jesus. Because just being a good neighbour is a way where we can serve with open hands. And then, of course, there's church. Church. The priest and the Levite. They were the most churchy people in this story. And they were the people who got it most wrong, because they didn't see the needs. However, I want to begin this little section by saying, church is truly amazing. It is just amazing what you all do to keep this place going. Not just to keep this place going through its worship. You know, somebody provided the bread. Somebody had to go and buy it. Somebody cut it so that Doug didn't struggle too much. Somebody put out the glasses and filled them with wine. Somebody will clear it all away and wash it up. Just one tiny little part of this service involves a lot of service. But it's not just about enabling us to worship, the singing, the putting out of chairs, the cleaning, the walk, making sure the heat's on, serving the coffee and tea before we get here, opening the doors, welcoming us, making sure there are enough coat hangers for us to hang our coats on, thousands of things, doing the audio-visual stuff. So much just to enable us for this hour or so to worship God together. And this is only a tiny fragment of the life of this church. People took the offering. Somebody will count it. Somebody will bank it. Somebody has paid the preacher already. You know, people do hundreds and hundreds of jobs, from washing up to high finance, to keep the church functioning. But that's not it either. It's all about the mission of the church, carrying out the work of God in this area. I bet every one of you does something, and some of you do an amazing amount. And I want to say, before I say anything else about the priest and the Levite and the dangers of working in the church, it is amazing. Don't take one another for granted. Recognize in those who serve you the love of God being given. And recognize in what you do, however big or however small it is, that you are serving with open hands and showing the love of Christ to other people here. But as the priest and Levite remind us, there are dangers in thinking about serving in the church. The first danger, I hope we've avoided, is thinking that's the only place that God really cares about. No, he cares about our work. He cares about our home. He cares about how we treat our neighbours. But yes, he does care about how we serve in the church. And there is a danger for us that we serve according to our needs, that we do what we do in order to satisfy needs that we're conscious of or unconscious of. I've seen many illustrations of this during the many years that I've been involved in the life of the church, and particularly as a minister. And when people are serving to meet their own needs, it nearly always goes wrong. People get grumpy about it. If somebody else tries to help, they get upset about it. If they don't get appreciated or get enough attention, they don't like it. And they throw in the towel, but not usually in a nice way. They normally clip you around the ear with the towel as they're doing it. There is a danger, you see, that we serve in order to fulfill our needs. What we really need to do to serve to the best of our ability in the church is to know what our gifts are, to know what our passion is, and how much opportunity we have. Now, I don't have time to go into that in detail, but some of us may be, you know, good at teaching. We may have a gift of explaining things to others and helping them learn. That's great. I hope I've got a bit of that. But then there's the issue of the passion that we have, because I don't have a passion to work with children. Some of you will. Some of you may be out there already and will never know that I've said this. I have a passion to help grown-ups, adults. That's why I try and use my gift of preaching and teaching with people like you, not go off and sit with the 6, 7, 8, 17-year-olds, because that's not where my passion is. Now, I can do that, and sometimes it's right that I should, but it's not where my passion is. So what's your gift that God has given you? What are your gifts? What's your passion? Where should you be using that? And how much opportunity have you got? Those are three things to bear in mind to avoid the danger that we just serve to meet our own needs. Serving is very, very important. There's a marvellous quote. It's so good, I lost my bit of paper. But this is a marvellous quote that you found. I'm going to borrow this. Martin Luther King: everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't need to have a college degree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. And if we're going to serve God with open hands, whether it's at work, home, our neighbours, or in the church, I believe we not only need open hands, We actually need a clean heart and an empty heart. A heart that doesn't look for praise, but longs to glorify God by what we do for others. So here it is, my friends. Whoever you are, however young or old, however gifted you may or may not feel yourself to be, each one of us has this incredible opportunity of joining with Jesus in showing to others the full extent of God's love. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. I hope when you do whatever you do, you'll remember that's what it's really about. That you are being chosen and used by God to show his love to other people. I've got a few Bible reading notes if people want them afterwards.